This episode is made possible by Awin. Build, scale, and optimize your creator affiliate programs for maximum ROI with Awin. Leverage the platform's best-in-class technology and award-winning expertise in end-to-end influencer program and campaign management to your brand's advantage and drive impressive results. Visit awin.com/emarketer to learn more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banking and Payment Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer, brought to you by Awin. Today is May 14th, 2024. I'm Rob Rubin, Head of Business Development at eMarketer and your host. Today, we're going to discuss what future role ATMs will play in retail media. And I know this sounds funny if you think of ATMs solely as cash dispensers. And there's probably nobody better to have this conversation with than Stuart McKinnon, who's COO of NCR Atleos. And those are the guys that make the ATMs. Stuart, before we jump into it, let's play an icebreaker game called Quick Fire so our audience can get to know you better. So first, hey, Stuart, how you doing?
Hey, good morning, Rob. Great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I really appreciate having you on the show today. And just so the audience can get to know you a little bit more, where are you recording from right now?
I am at my home office here in Dallas, Texas. So enjoying the weather in the spring here.
Yeah, but Atleos isn't headquartered in Dallas and you're the COO. So where is Atleos headquartered?
We're based in Atlanta, Georgia. So just enjoying a little bit of time away from the office this week.
How often do you go into the office, actually?
Pretty much every week. So this is a rare treat for me.
So you travel like, do you leave on a Monday and come home on a Friday, or you do like a Tuesday, Thursday kind of thing?
You got it. Pretty much the Monday, Friday thing. So lots of time in Atlanta.
All right. Dallas is nice. Atlanta's nice too, though, right?
Great cities. Both great cities.
But you're not going to go to Atlanta for full time.
Well, my wife and I are still having that discussion, let's say.
So I don't want to get in the middle of that discussion. So I think that we should jump to our first segment of the show, which is the headlines. In the headlines, I pick a recent article on our topic to discuss. And today, the topic is the role of ATMs in retail media. And the article I picked is from the Financial Brand, and it's titled, "As Third-Party Cookies Crumble, Chase Shows How First-Party Data Can Be a Boon for Banks." And I put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to read the story. The part of the article that I want to focus on is about Chase's announcement of the Chase Media Solutions platform to enable advertisers to target Chase customers based on their actual purchase history. So, you know, Google can use your search history as a way to help advertisers target. So the idea there being if you're, you know, the things that you're searching for are things you're most interested in, and that provides a lift. Chase is doing it based on what you actually buy across all of the different retailers that you purchase with, compared to Amazon, who does it based on what you've been purchasing and looking at it on Amazon. Chase has already executed 30-day ad campaigns for Air Canada, Solo Stove, Blue Bottle, and Whataburger. So they claim that the brands have seen a lift and have gotten traction with those ads. So what do you think of this development?
You know, I think we've all grown up, you and I certainly, in the era where all of a sudden we started seeing things pop up of things we might have looked at, right?
Yeah.
In our internet browser. And all of a sudden we started seeing things come into our email for things we looked at. You know, at first it felt creepy and now it's kind of just part of our everyday lives, right? So to now see,
I get to see, I don't know, my wife and I are somehow connected. So I see stuff that she's looking at too, which is kind of.
Exactly. You're having a conversation about something in the living room and then the next, you know, next thing shows up in your email. So I think this is probably the next evolution, right? It's something you've actually purchased. So it feels a little more targeted. I don't know if it feels more intrusive, but it feels like it's certainly the next evolution, right? I bought something at Whataburger, and now I've got an offer to buy something that I'll probably, I live in Texas, which is sort of the Whataburger state. I'll probably
I assumed it was a burger place, but I, from the name, but I've never had a Whataburger.
Yes, welcome to Texas. You'll have many of them, and then they'll send you more ads for them if you happen to be a Chase card holder, I guess. But I guess it's the next evolution, right? They've certainly Chase, where I live, there's a Chase branch on every corner. And if you are an advertiser looking for a certainly more direct focus on your core customer, these guys can give you that access certainly better than I guess Google can, right?
So I was going to ask this question in a better way, but, you know, what could go wrong? if you're a Chase customer, like, what are the risks for doing it this way? Like, what do they face?
Well, when you're on the internet doing things that you maybe don't want other people to know about, there's ways to sort of go about doing that, right? There's VPNs and all kinds of other things that people, it's not something I think about every day, but certainly a lot of people like to have their privacy. And I'm not sure that there's a way to do that when you're buying things. So if I'm out buying things with my Chase card and I don't necessarily want advertisements about them, I'm not sure that there's a way to achieve that, right? There's no incognito mode for my Chase card, right?
Not yet.
So I guess there's probably some things we're going to learn along the way that this is new ground, I guess, that we're breaking. And so there are some pitfalls that we're going to discover along the way. I certainly, as a Chase cardholder, and I am a Chase cardholder because they're the most convenient bank. I may not bank with a lot of banks because I do a lot of testing. I have a lot of banks that are customers and I like to try things out.
Yeah.
But I would certainly want to know what was happening with my purchase data before I went out and purchased things.
Right. So you'd want to know, like, what are you going to do with the data before I actually make the purchase?
Today, I feel comfortable that I think I feel like I know my purchase data on the internet is probably not very private, but I feel fairly secure that when I go and use my card, that that's just kind of between me, the merchant, and maybe my bank, right? For some reason, I feel that level of confidence. I don't know if I should, but I do.
I don't think you should because it's merchants, partners, the bank's partners,
yeah,
right? You've agreed to give them all some level of access to what you're actually doing, I think.
Yeah, I think when I sign that 67-page document that I just sort of agree on when I get my credit card, that's right.
Yeah,
I feel very comfortable about that.
How do you think that this model could extend to ATMs? And I'll point out that Chase operates over 15,000 ATMs in 40 states in the U.S. So that's a lot of retail locations for points of advertising.
Yeah, you know, when people are in front of an ATM, there's two really good points where you have really their absolute focus. First, when they put their card in, they're staring at the screen waiting for something to happen. And that's called the idle cycle. And we generally have some type of advertising on that cycle. And if you're at a retail location, we're advertising something at the retailer. If you're at the bank, we're usually advertising a mortgage rate, a savings account, a checking account. So that's good advertising space. And then once you're waiting for something to happen, right, the cash to come out or the shutter to open to take your deposit, another 20 seconds of advertising space where your eyeballs are absolutely locked on that screen. So I think for Chase, again, good time to take advantage of this program they're putting together and bring in third parties that are maybe not, you know, a Chase deposit account, but maybe a Whataburger opportunity.
Right. Well, I want to continue this discussion and dig deeper into how ATMs will play a role in retail media with our next segment called Story by Numbers. In our final segment, Story by Numbers, I pick a number or two that we can discuss about our topic. And I want to carry this conversation from the headlines, or I want to continue it, because according to the ATM Industry Association, at the end of 2022, the estimated number of active ATMs in the U.S. was between 520 and 540,000 ATMs, following a growth of about 21,000 terminals from 2021. So a question which I think is really kind of interesting, and then we'll get more into the retail media component. But with the advent of all these ways to buy things without cash today, why are ATM networks still growing?
I think you've got a number of factors. I think some of that growth is sort of almost the pandemic, sort of a lot of ATMs went dark during the pandemic. And so they're coming back.
So it's not net new growth. It's sort of getting back to where we were growth.
Yeah, I think that's Stuart's opinion. And, you know, I think I have a pretty good view of how ATMs exist in the world. But you do have a lot of people who want choice, right? And paying with cash is a choice, right? I want to pay with cash because it's a good budgeting tool. I want to pay cash because, as we just talked about, it's privacy, right? So now I can, that is an option that it is not trackable or advertisable or stored somewhere to be used for or against me in any way. So a lot of people choose to pay with cash. We also in the U.S. have a tremendous amount of un- and underbanked people who live in a cash world every day.
Right. You know, I've done some work on my house. What I find is that when a contractor gives you a price, there's the price. And then if you ask, what if I paid in cash, you get a different price. So there's a lot of, you know, as you point out, cash is sort of less traceable than other things. So there's a lot of demand to save money essentially by paying cash.
Yeah, I mean, the cash discount is alive and well for many reasons. And one of the primary reasons for a contractor is it's a 3% fee for them to take a cart, right? So they don't have the type of volume that a large retailer is. So they're paying the most expensive fee that they can pay to take a credit card or a debit card. And so for them, taking cash is a far more economical way to manage their business, right? If it's $1,000, they're going to get $1,000, right?
And if they have unbanked people that work for them, they have an easier way to pay them.
100%. So there's still a very vibrant cash economy. Our transactions and our network in the retail environment were up roughly 8% last year in the U.S. And so, you know, cash is still a very vibrant part of our sort of overall payments ecosystem.
You know, not that I know personally, but I have heard from friends, I live in New Jersey, is that if you go into a marijuana dispensary, you have to pay cash.
Yes, that's absolutely true because of the federal banking regulations, right? And so because marijuana is not federally legal, banks will not allow payment processors to have payment terminals inside a marijuana dispensary. So marijuana is 100% cash business.
And they have ATMs in probably all those dispensaries.
Some of them allow them and some of them don't. It's a fairly highly regulated part of the ATM industry as well.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's interesting. I want to ask, so I mentioned that there's like a 520,000 to 540,000 ATMs. How many does Atleos have their fingers on?
We own about 50,000 in the U.S. and we touch about another 250,000 in the U.S. So we touch about 300,000-ish. So if you break that 500,000 up, about 125 are in bank locations and the rest are in retail locations. So still a very sort of vibrant retail-based ATM economy out there. And so we've got a lot of independent operators running machines and then banks operating machines as well.
You know, one of the interesting things is that, as you mentioned, you do serve ads on these retailer. Like if I go to Walgreens and there's an ATM and I'm getting cash at the Walgreens, I'll see an ad, you know, for something at the Walgreens that I could buy. But it's not typically targeted, meaning that they don't have any information about what I like to buy when they're serving up that ad. So do you think serving targeted ads from third parties like will work? Like, do you think that would be a better thing if you had that connectivity with a retailer to be able to dynamically serve an ad to somebody at the moment that they're pulling cash?
Yeah, I think that would be sort of marketing nirvana, right? For both the retailer and the card issuer. So if you think, if I've got a Chase card and I'm in a Walgreens, right? And Chase knows that I buy a lot of orange juice or whatever diapers, right? I served that guy an ad for shaving cream and it's a mom who buys orange juice and, you know, doesn't buy men's shaving cream. The ad is not very effective. But if I can deliver a diapers or an orange juice ad and a coupon that accompanies that from a CPG group, that's a win for the CPG, for the retailer and for Chase, who's delivering that targeted program that they've just announced. Right. I think that'd be a very powerful thing.
The complexity of that, though, is that, you know, that of the use case that you described is that when you stick your Chase card in, there's connectivity to Chase at that retailer, the off-premise, not owned by Chase ATM, because it's in a Walgreens. I wonder how hard it's going to be to get all of these different disparate data sets to actually talk together to be able to do something like that.
I think we're not that far away from that. You know, in reality, today that transaction goes to Chase to ask if the person has $20 anyway, right? And right. And web APIs being very relatively simple to light up, if Chase is building this program already, then they're going to have a way for people to bounce off the program and say, hey, what kind of ad can I deliver to this Chase person, right? Through it, you know, it's going to be tokenized and anonymized, but there's got to be a way for Chase to deliver, to essentially say, hey, what does this Chase card holder want, right?
And then there has to be an arrangement between the retailer and the CPG and the bank.
Yeah, so there's got to be a way. So as with any of these programs, there's going to be hands in pockets and, you know, along the chain, right? So I'm sure people are going to be stepping up to deliver these sort of programs to allow these linkages to happen, right? When you see a Google ad show up for something that you searched, somebody is helping sort of essentially assemble all of those links in the chain. So I am sure with Chase putting this together that there are people ready and able to deliver those things for a few cents if you're willing to pay up for it.
Do you think bank-owned operated ATMs or off-premise ATMs located at retail locations will be more successful in selling retail media?
I think when you're in the retailer, there's more instant gratification, right? If I get a coupon for orange juice and I'm in a store that sells orange juice, I don't have to remember to do anything. I'm right there and I can instantly, you know, consume right. that rebate. If I'm in a bank and it's not a bank delivered product, I have to remember to do something, right? I either have to like scan a QR code and do something, or I have to remember to bring that coupon to the store to get the orange juice. So I think the proximity to consumption is probably leaning in favor of the retail ATM. And banks haven't traditionally partnered with third parties well or dynamically. Now that's changing with the likes of the Chimes and the Varos and these sort of neobanks who have done a good job of bringing in third parties. But the traditional community financial institutions will really have to start amping up their digital game to start delivering those kinds of third-party services to really benefit from this.
The way I look at it is that banks sort of culturally are very product-centric, and I would find it hard to see a bank offering a rebate or a coupon or a discount for a third-party product if there wasn't some tie-in to one of the Chase products in some form or fashion. So the, you know, the easiest example is if you buy that, you need to use the Chase card in order to get the discount.
Yeah, it isn't intuitive to what they've traditionally done, as you know, so it's right. a step away from their core.
But retailers like a drugstore, you know, your prescription drugs aside, but the sort of food and beverage items in a drugstore, they don't make a lot of margin on the items. They make their money in retail media. You know, it used to be, you know, selling end caps and product placement on the shelves, which it still is a big business. And they've extended that into a digital domain where they really are very active. So I take the opinion that I think that the retailers are going to be much better at selling retail media to advertisers because they're already selling other things to them about what happens in the store. So they're going to be much more in line with like, hey, let's turn this ATM on to get more money out of the manufacturers.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're more naturally inclined to it. They've been doing it, as you've said, for many years.
Yeah.
And they are great at leveraging every square foot of space inside that location.
That's right. So I think retail media is going to be a great opportunity for ATMs. I understand that Chase has built Chase Media Solutions. That's great. But I think that they'll be more successful on those sort of, you know, where they have off-premise ATMs that are located in shopping malls and other places, that they use those outlets to get consumers to drive traffic to the retailers. And they'll do better that way than doing an offer with a product tie-in at one of their retail stores.
Yeah, it'll be certainly interesting to watch how this plays out.
Well, this has been a really fantastic discussion. You know, it's sort of an oddball, like how do ATMs and retail media, what do they have in common, or why are we talking about them at the same time? And there's a tremendous reason to talk about them. So this has been a fantastic discussion, Stuart. I really appreciate you coming along today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Rob. It's been great.
I also want to thank everyone for listening to the Banking and Payment Show, an eMarketer podcast brought to you by Awin. Also, thank you to our editor, Victoria. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of Behind the Numbers with Marcus Johnson. Don't miss it. Bye, Stuart.
Bye. Have a good day.